This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, December the 11th, 2015. Hello, and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The Hampshire Chronicle extracts we will be reading for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. Let me give you the regular notices. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene can also help you with that. Give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And one more reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now, on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Maria Head, sitting in this week for Ros Lydiard. The main headlines this week are Worker Spared Jail, Doubts Cast Over Silver Hill Plans, Fears Over Shortlist, Civic Chiefs Ordered to Give Leisure Centre Deal Details. The first headline story, please, Jerry.
Worker Spared Jail. An unqualified workman has avoided jail after causing the death of a gas engineer at a Winchester house. Peter Kowalczyk incorrectly fitted a ladder, which led to David Wood falling and hitting his head on stone tiles at the property in Week. Mr. Wood's daughter told the court how relatives were hurt beyond belief by the loss of the 64-year-old, who was planning for retirement before the senseless accident. Kowalczyk, 62, of Howard Road, Southampton, was given a six-month suspended sentence. Winchester Crown Court heard on Monday how he was sent to a buy-to-let bungalow in Rowlings Road in late 2012. He bought a ladder for the loft, but failed to install a retaining bar which would have locked it to the correct angle, the court heard. In March 2013, Mr. Wood, of Peverell's Wood Avenue, Chandler's Ford, was sent to look at a boiler in the attic. The ladder came off its hinges under his weight, and he suffered a fatal head injury. Mr. Wood's daughter, Debbie, said, "The loss of Dad has changed our lives so much, it hurts beyond belief. It being so senseless and avoidable hurts all the more. He worked so hard all his life to provide well for his family, putting us at the forefront of all that he did. He was looking forward to beginning to slow down, and within a few years looking to retire." She added, "I miss Dad, the guy in his shorts at the barbecue, the guy a few words that put his feelings into action by doing things for people." Kowalczyk, a janitor, has no safety qualifications and speaks little English, but the court heard testimony to his hard work from clients. The court heard he fitted longer screws to the ladder as a precaution, but didn't fit the bar due to lack of room. "He didn't believe that would affect the safety of it," said Jason Taylor, mitigating. "This is one of those tragic accidents that stems from a lack of knowledge and nothing more. The family do not wish for Kowalczyk to go to jail," he added. Anna Vigars, prosecuting, said, "Both the police and the health and safety executive investigated what happened, and they learned that Mr. Kowalczyk was sent there on direction by a property management company called Fab Show to go into the bungalow and carry out tasks involving routine maintenance and DIY. Kowalczyk pleaded guilty to a charge under the Health and Safety at Work Act. A similar charge was dropped in October against Fabshow UK Limited, which denied the allegation. Judge Keith Cutler said, if he turned up at someone's home and said, I'm here to fit a ladder, the public would expect he has qualifications, skills and abilities.
Doubts cast over Silver Hill plans. Silver Hill has been thrown into further doubt after it emerged that developer U-turned on claims that construction would start this month. TH Real Estate has said that the scheme is unlikely to start in the near future, making it all but certain to miss key deadlines and raising the prospect of the plans collapsing entirely. The sudden reverse comes after the Court of Appeal offered a lifeline to the firm's scheme from 2014, which dropped a bus station and 100 discount flats. As reported in last week's Chronicle, the currently proposed 2009 scheme, including the station and flats alongside shops and parking, must begin by February to meet planning deadlines. TH Real Estate, previously known as Henderson, said as recently as October that work would start this month. But the chances of this happening are now slim after the court granted leave to appeal a decision which quashed the controversial 2014 changes. Days after the announcement, company chiefs arranged a short notice meeting with Winchester City Council, where they said they were now looking to start the 2009 plans later next year or even beyond. This would take it beyond the expiry of planning permission in February and a compulsory purchase order on the site, which ends in March. The revelations came from council leader, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, amid growing confusion. He wrote to TH Real Estate on Friday to ask what changes they want to make to the scheme, what is being done to put the current plans into place, and how they will safeguard a compulsory purchase order on the site which expires in March. Councillor Godfrey told the Chronicle on Monday, I like people to be consistent and predictable. I don't like surprises. I like it when people say they're going to do something and they set expectations, though that those expectations are met, but unfortunately they have not been. Anti-Silver Hill campaigners have put further pressure on the council to abandon the developer. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, leader of the Anti-Silver Hill Winchester Deserves Better campaign, said, as things stand, the scheme is more likely to be delivered by Father Christmas than by Henderson. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Lib Dem opposition leader, told Cabinet last week, well, here we are again. It's December and there's absolutely no indication of anything happening on site. How much longer do we have to wait? Is Henderson's heart really in this scheme? Can we trust them when they seem to have gone back on so many promises? I think the time has come to look very hard at the options available to us. Councillor Godfrey said cutting ties with TH Real Estate is one opposition to the table, but added that the council's first choice is to implement the 2009 scheme. The company's development director, Martin Perry, said, we have received the communication from Winchester City Council and will be considering its contents carefully. We remain committed to the successful regeneration of the site and to our partners, the City of Winchester.
Fears over shortlist. Only one of five architects shortlisted for the major station approach scheme is from Winchester. The firms have been chosen by the City Council for a competition to choose the design team for the redevelopment. The multi-million pound scheme will transform the area from the railway station to Cattle Market car park with new offices, parking, homes, public spaces and shops. The shortlist is Design Engine Winchester, ADAS RHWL London, Field & Clegg Bradley Bath, Grimshaw Architects, London, Hopkins Architects Partnership, London. A number of Winchester firms have been overlooked, including Adam Architecture and Architecture PLB. Richard Rose Casemore, a director at Design Engine, said, "We're delighted to be involved in such an important scheme in our home city. The selection process thus far has been rigorous, and our preparation for the next stage of concept design in early January is intensive. However, we intend to combine our detailed knowledge of the sites with our passion for the highest design quality to ensure imaginative proposals for the city. However, some local architects that failed to make the shortlist expressed concerns. Nigel Anderson, director of Adam Architecture, part of a local consortium that also included AR Design, Chaplin Farrant Wiltshire and Pro Vision, said, "We thought we were a compellingly diverse consortium. We all have over 100 years in Winchester. We thought they would allow for a diverse scheme rather than one particular style." Mr. Anderson said, "Having just one architect ran the risk of a monolithic design, one of the major criticisms of Silver Hill. There will be a house style. The city is too intricate and delicate for that. There is a sense of déjà vu." Winchester City Council has also announced the jury which will make a recommendation to the Council Cabinet in March. Derek Latham, architect, jury chairman, Cindy Walters, architect, Bob Wallbridge, architect, Hampshire County Council, Keith Lehman, chairman of City of Winchester Trust, city councillors Liz Hutchinson, Rob Humby and Barry Lipscomb, John Hearn, urban designer and former senior planner at the City Council, and Ben Clifton, Strategic Transport, Hampshire County Council. There will be a public exhibition of the shortlisted schemes. Chris Higgins of the City of Winchester Trust said, "This is a stunning shortlist of the highest calibre architects in the country. It's also healthy to have an excellent local practice pitched against some of the best national firms, and the competition has an independent RIBA advisor so that the judging will be scrupulously fair to all taking part." He added, "After all the criticism the city has received recently, it is good to recognise they deserve some positive PR for this."
Civic chiefs ordered to give leisure centre deal details. Winchester City Council has been rebuked by the information watchdog for the second time in 2 months after withholding details of a controversial leisure centre deal. The Information Commissioner has ordered civic chiefs to release figures and emails relating to the management of River Park Leisure Centre. The ruling marks a victory for campaigner Martin Wilson, who began filing Freedom of Information, FOI, requests over 2 years ago in a bid to prove the deal has been botched. And it comes weeks after the Commissioner ordered the release of financial details from an outdated version of the Silver Hill regeneration, following an FOI request by Judith Martin. The River Park contract has not been tendered since 1992 and has been granted to DC Leisure, now Places for People, until 2023. The Council denies Mr. Wilson's allegations, which state that £1 million payments to the operator were granted without appropriate approval, and Council has made decisions based on unreliable information. Mr. Wilson said, "This has been said to be a uniquely profitable leisure centre, and the Winchester taxpayer has not benefited, far from it. We have spent some £30 million in the last 10 years or so on a failing facility. However, I could not get answers out of the council. I'm not looking for heads to roll, but I want to ensure that contracts of that nature are being monitored and enforced appropriately." Information to be released includes fine details of DC Leisure's original and renewed contracts, as well as terms offered to the Council during negotiations in 2012. Emails between the operator and Council bosses, including Chief Executive Simon Eden, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury, and former leader Keith Wood, are also to be published. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Council leader, said, "The small amount of information we withheld was there to protect the interests of our partners. We're taking decisions which are consistent with our previous practice. The Council must publish the information by December the 17th.
Thank you all. We'll give you the death announcements now, and they will be followed by Claire with Christian comment. And the death announcements start with Cleve. Joshua John Cleve, also known as Joss, at home, 26th of November, aged 69.
Cole, Rosemary Cole, formerly of Oliver's Battery, on 1st December, aged 77.
Cottingham, Peter Cottingham, in Winchester Hospital on the 29th of November, aged 84.
Dobby, Betty Esther Dobby, peacefully on 4th of December, aged 86.
Elwood, June Marion Elwood, knee grey, on the 1st of December, aged 84 years.
Grey, George Henry Harry Grey, peacefully on 6th December, aged 92.
Hoare, Julia Hoare, on the 30th of November, aged 84.
Hogan, Patricia Patsy Hogan, 4th of December, in Winchester Hospital, aged 80.
Miles, Sarah Miles, knee Stogden, on the 25th of November, after a long illness, aged 52.
Morris, John F.J. Morris, after a short illness at St. Richard's Hospital, aged 90.
Hilary Luthwin, Ira stroke Taffy, Pragnell, peacefully in hospital on the 3rd of December, aged 89.
Smith, Helen Smith, on the 28th of November, aged 95.
Tarrant, Christine Ann Tarrant, on the 4th of December, aged 71.
Wilson, Joan Wilson, formerly of Alsford, on the 26th of November, aged 90.
And moving on to Christian comment, this week's contributor is Graham Bokett. Thank you, Claire.
He's headed this article, "The Real Message of Christmas." The other day, I found myself wistfully looking into a shop full of electronic gadgets. The shop was a thing of beauty, full of wonderful gadgetry. I was drawn in. The aesthetic of the shop was modern, clean and minimal. Beautiful. The only thing that made it look messy was the people in it, who were, like me, drooling over various pieces of clever plastic and precious metal. I stood looking at a mobile phone, eyes full of wonder and awe. I was convinced I needed it. I could do so much with it. I could even make telephone calls with it, if I really had to. The irony of the name of this shop is not lost on me either when I think about temptation. It has been annually reported, and has again this year been said, that Christmas spending has become for many households an issue of great strife. It is too competitive, too aggressive, too demanding. The burden of Christmas creating conflict and anxiety for many families and individuals. Since November, we have had a never-ending marketing onslaught, bombarding our senses with advertisements, encouraging us to fizz with excitement and part with our cash. That's the really important thing, part with our cash, as we prepare to celebrate Christmas. There is no way, unless you've been living on the moon, although it seems one retailer has even got this covered, that you have missed that we are well and truly in the festive period. We still have a few weeks to go. So ask yourself, are you fizzing yet? Well, I suspect the people living in the northwest of England are not fizzing. For any family affected by the severe flooding, I suspect their Christmas will be more about being together as a family, safe and with shelter. It seems the things that are really important often only occur to us when we're faced with losing them. Tragedy is often a sharp focus on what is really important and what is not. I'm walking a thin line here, I know. It would be really easy to sound like an old curmudgeon. It is easy to be negative about Christmas and how the commercialisation of it all has devalued and detracted from its true message. It's a bit of an old chestnut for Christians at this time of year to point out that we are not yet even at Christmas, that we are currently in the season of Advent. That's right, for all us Christian anoraks, the distinction is a really important one. Advent is a period of preparation for Christmas, and it has little or nothing to do with shopping. Advent is the period of time when the things that separate us from God, from knowing Jesus, are set aside, meditated on, and crucially, dispensed with. And that was written by the Reverend Graham Balcott.
Thank you, Claire. We have a mixed bag of letters today, and Robin will start us off with the first letter.
Out of Hours GP. Sir, allow me firstly to state my support for the National Health Service. I owe them my granddaughter's life. However, recent experience of trying to get a doctor to see a sick baby at the weekend has left me shocked by the ineptitude of the system. My 10-month-old grandson had been sick for a few days. His mother tried to get a GP appointment on Thursday, November the 26th, but the first available date was the following Tuesday, which she booked. The child worsened over the weekend, and by Saturday was fretful and dehydrated. His mother called 111 at about 4 p.m. that day. She was told a doctor would phone and that the baby would be seen that day. The doctor called at about 6 p.m, announcing himself as the doctor for Hampshire, and said all his appointments were taken. After discussion, he then offered an appointment at 11:15 p.m. that night in Portsmouth, over 35 miles away, or said the child should be taken to a casualty department. My daughter opted for the 11:15 p.m. appointment, fearing long queues in casualty. This meant that she had to take a sick, crying child from his cot in the middle of the night and drive him from north of Winchester, 35 miles down a motorway, to find a place she had never been before. She was seen by a doctor at about 11:30 p.m. and then told to drive to a pharmacy in a neighbouring town about 5 miles further away to redeem the prescription. This pharmacy shut at midnight, so my daughter drove as fast as she could to a town she had never visited before and arrived at 12:01 a.m. Only because of the good nature of the pharmacist who served her after closing time was she able to get the necessary medicine. She then faced the long drive back home, arriving at 1:30 a.m, having covered 85 miles. How can this be deemed an efficient and reasonable system? What if the child had come from a non-car-owning family? In my opinion, the out-of-hours GP system needs a thorough and speedy review. Christina Harris, Lower Road, South Wanston.
This letter is headed Shared Spaces and comes from Andrew Parker. With reference to a letter in the Chronicle, November the 26th, I would like to take issue with the gentleman who wrote suggesting that a shared space might be a good idea for Winchester. Whilst I understand his concern about house building, increased traffic and air pollution, he doesn't know what horrors such a suggestion would be for certain sections of the population. Shared space is an area of level surface. There is no difference between pavements and the road, so you cannot tell where pavement ends and the road begins. There are no landmarks of any kind to help you, particularly if you are disabled or a guide dog owner, to help you establish where you are in order to continue your journey. If that is not bad enough, the pedestrian has to traverse this area, making eye contact with the motorists in order to get across. For a person like myself, who is totally blind and also has a hearing impairment, such a suggestion is highly dangerous at best and a disaster waiting to happen at worst. Shared spaces will create difficulties for disabled people, particularly blind and partially sighted, guide dog owners, those with mobility problems, including wheelchair users, the elderly and mothers with small children. It flies in the face of common sense concerning safety, such as crossing roads, which is something that every child should learn. The National Federation of the Blind has been campaigning against shared spaces for years. The person to be contacted is David Bates on 01902 880 880, email, and this is in lowercase, Bates, BATES 100 at btconnect.com, who has been spearheading the campaign. I sincerely hope that council officers and members of the planning committee are aware of the Federation's video and documents, and if not, that they, through the pages of your newspaper, will take the necessary steps to prevent any shared spaces in Winchester. Finally, I would also like to comment on the petition relating to the St Clement's surgery. I am a patient there, and hope that whenever the surgery moves, it will be a central location and be accessible to all its current patients, so that I can still get there safely. Andrew Parker, Chesil Street, Winchester.
This letter is headed Good Samaritan. With all the death, disaster and unkindness which seems to have infiltrated most corners of the world, including small villages where communities once used to look out for each other, I was amazed at the kindness and generosity shown towards me by a young gentleman in the Winchester Tesco store on Wednesday, December the 2nd. I was having a particularly frantic and busy day after attending a funeral in the morning and then trying to deal with companies and individuals who have no common sense or communication skills and are obviously not from the planet Earth, when I was asked to do some emergency shopping for a friend. I picked up my bag, drove to Tesco, collected the shopping, and then, when I opened my purse at the till, found I had left my debit card in the bag that I had taken to the funeral. To my complete surprise, the young gentleman behind me at the checkout offered to pay for my shopping. I said no thank you, but while in total shock and amazement at his generosity, he just gave the money to the cashier, who was also in shock. I asked for an address to send a cheque to reimburse his good deed, but he refused. This man was definitely a very good Samaritan. Maybe he doesn't believe in God, but he will be on my prayer list every week and has restored my faith in human nature. Ollie Bramley, East Stratton, Winchester.
Library is certainly an issue now. John Miller's letter on December the 3rd about the serious threat to Alsford Library is poignant. Could this be the same Alsford, I wonder, one of whose Liberal Democrat councillors stated at the Silver Hill debate a few months ago that the city's development fate wasn't an issue for him, since he'd not received any letters about it from his own constituents. One is reminded of the observation of the German Lutheran pastor Martin Niemöller about his compatriots' attitude following the rise of the Nazis. He said, "First they came for the communists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me, by which time there was nobody left to speak up for me."
And this letter is about cathedral visitors and comes from Julian English. "It is one of the many joys of being a volunteer in Winchester Cathedral, and there are nearly 700 of us, to see what the place does for so many of our paying visitors. Their feedback on the cards in the cathedral and through TripAdvisor speak of beauty, wonder, spirituality, gratitude, and so much else. Many of these paying visitors are people of different faiths and of no faith. Yes, we lose some due to the entry charge, but we give a memorable experience to many more very satisfied paying visitors, who often then want to give more for the current major works of conservation and transformation of such a landmark building. Julian English, Courtney Road, Winchester."
Odd juxtaposition. "Sir, whoever on your staff dreamt up the juxtaposition of the vegetarian headline and the red meat photograph has a somewhat weird sense of humour. Chronicle, November the 26th. My wife, a vegetarian, nearly had a very nasty turn. John Stott, Exton, Mearn Valley."
Traffic concerns. "Sir, your report, entitled Transport Chiefs Dismiss Fears, needs clarification to explain the contradiction summarised below. In response to the considerable concerns about traffic congestion expressed in your columns over recent weeks, the Council's survey manager, Mike Shergold, admits it's all rather difficult as they have no city-wide traffic forecasts nor the resources to resolve the current situation. Whilst Councillor Sean Woodward tried to reassure us by stating that county highways had strategic transport models with a plan for growth over the next 20 years, but did not explain what they were. Many people I know are really concerned about the impact of new housing at Barton Farm, Pitt and the police headquarters, together with the commercial proposals for Silver Hill and Station Approach, will have the combined potential to bring traffic into our city to a gridlocked standstill. We should not allow any of these major developments to exacerbate the current traffic problems without first identifying a solution. I appreciate this may prove challenging, so we'll need a bold and radical solution, and I've received considerable support for my suggestion of commissioning Ben Hamilton Bailey, letters November the 12th, to design a shared space scheme for the city. But if the powers that be have an alternative solution, please would they clarify what it is. May I ask the Highways Authority to issue a clear statement explaining their strategy and how they intend to address the increase in congestion when it is anticipated that over 3,000 more vehicles could soon be on the roads in the Winchester area." And the letter is from Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
Another letter on the same subject, a lot more brief. "Let's not kid ourselves. When Barton Farm, Winchester Village, etc. are built, the traffic system in Winchester will be gridlocked several hours a day, 7 days a week, and both the city and county councils know it. That is why their silence is deafening. Chaos looms. Stephen Stamford, Wales Street, Winnall, Winchester."
Take some time. Silver Hill isn't known for its chuckles, but it was hard not to smile at how the City Council Cabinet meeting on December the 2nd resembled the Monty Python dead parrot sketch. Everyone there could see that the Henderson proposal had fallen off its perch and that no amount of shouting at it or daft questioning was going to bring it back to life. It was dying a long time ago and its burial long overdue. Over Christmas, the council might nip into the cage and try to change the bird by way of an extension to the contract, under the bird-brained pretext that only Henderson can deliver what the city wants. But it'll just be another turkey that ends up getting stuffed in court, or preferably by other councillors fed up with Henderson's promises. When it finally realises that the Henderson proposal is as dead as a dodo, the worst thing would be for the council to flap about like a headless chicken in the hope that a new development plan can be hatched overnight. It can't, and it shouldn't be expected to. After 13 years of getting it completely wrong, with one developer a while longer spent getting, first and foremost, the concept right, would be more than worth it, given that we should be aspiring to build something to last 100 years and more. In my view, the first duck to get in a row is a thorough understanding of the archaeology on the site. What is needed is a full-blown civic-led excavation, not just a few trial pits dug by the developer in the hope that little is found, so that the council gives them license to churn up the site. A careful excavation might reveal the Roman baths and other significant features that independent experts think might be there. Once the archaeology is properly understood, then, and only then, can serious consideration be given to how the area around any possible exhibition centre might be developed. Given time, the city might just get the last laugh, and the ugly duckling might yet turn into a swan. Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor, Itchen Valley Ward.
Thank you. And when people of Winchester were asked by the roving reporter about that question of £4 million made by Winchester City Council from parking charges, could we have your say, Jerry, please?
Yes. The first one is Teresa Bougard of Fifield Road, Highcliffe. And she said, "I avoid parking in the city centre at all costs. It's ridiculous how many charges they have in Winchester for parking." Dave Allen, a self-employed vendor of Fleming Road Week, said, "Well, I think there should be better parking available and free parking at certain times, like Romsey. I do think parking is a bit of a cash cow for the council." Bill Madders from Chandler's Ford said, "Well, I think parking's a bit of a cash cow for the council. If the parking was free, they would attract more people into the city." And Tali Trow, a music teacher of Wharf Hill, Winchester, said, "I think they should increase the amount of parking spaces available. In terms of charges, it does not surprise about the amount of money they have made from it."
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And moving on to Chronicle comment, which is titled "Interesting Times, Curse or Blessing." The Chinese have a curse: "May you live in interesting times." No one could deny that Winchester is entering an interesting period. Barton Farm is set to be built. Once Carla Holmes and Winchester College can sort out their financial differences. Silver Hill is mired in increasing uncertainty, and the process that will eventually lead to the massive development of Station Approach has started with an architectural competition involving five firms, although only one local practice, Design Engine, which is disappointing. We also report on City Council leader Stephen Godfrey's speech to the Future of Winchester Conference last Thursday. It was a good speech, advocating change, displaying clarity and leadership, something the City Council has lacked at certain points in its recent history. Will this change be a curse or a blessing? The Chronicle believes, on the whole, it will be the latter. It is impossible to pickle Winchester in aspic. To say its unique charm means it must not change. A city is a living thing, and if you restrict it too much, you fatally smother it. But the road ahead is undoubtedly dangerous. The Chinese have another saying, if you sit by a river long enough, you will watch the bodies of your enemies float by. And now moving on to a letter from Westminster, George Hollingberry MP contributes. Thank you, Robin.
Letter from Westminster. Many people have lamented the age of oratory passing out of fashion in this country in the post-war period. The great House of Commons speeches have at times shaped our history, from Oliver Cromwell dissolving the Rump Parliament in 1653 with the words, "It is high time for me to put an end to your sitting in this place, which you have dishonoured by your contempt of all virtue and defiled by your practice of every vice," to Winston Churchill's most famous speech on June the 4th, 1940, in our darkest hour, "We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender." I could go on, for we are very lucky here in Britain to have a rich tapestry of such words expressed in good times and very bad by some great figures. And I'm sure many readers of this column can trump me with even more magical examples. But lately, many may struggle to find more modern comparisons to the two quoted. It appears the ability to make speeches that capture the imagination, elicit change, even bring a tear to the eye, has left us. Over in America, it seems politicians can make speeches full of oratory, like Martin Luther King and his "I Have a Dream" speech. And in recent times, Bill Clinton, or even Barack Obama, in his response to the Oregon mass shooting just this October. It appears that the use of language to inspire, to make us think, and to change attitudes still lingers there. Over here, I sometimes feel the age of sound bites has the upper hand. If it's short, pithy, and easily digestible, then it's good, and don't worry too much about the complexities. But sadly, our world rarely fits into such straitjackets of spin or 140 Twitter characters. Take the enormously complex situation of Syria. So Hillary Benn's speech to Parliament on the Syria vote last week was more important than just the sentiments expressed. I hope the resoundingly positive response it garnered will lead to more interest in some substantive public speaking beyond the soundbite and the put-down. I won't quote it here, but urge anyone who hasn't heard Hillary's speech to find it on the internet. Now, I don't know whether it was so good that it will be remembered years from now, but I was there, and it moved me, and it moved some on the Labour benches to tears in what was an emotional and very difficult decision for everyone. Perhaps we are so starved of good speeches that reach out, that are truthful and are impassioned in this time of cynicism in politics, that Hillary's words are only relatively good and will not pass the test of time. I do not know. I really do not know. But Hilary is to be congratulated. Whatever history will think of his speech, for standing up and reminding us of what good oratory actually is. I wrote to him to congratulate him, as did many of my colleagues. I don't share the socialist fervour that so impassioned him, but no one listening could do anything other than listen with rapt attention to every word. George Hollingbury, MP.
First person is contributed by Joanna Lewis, who talks about the great parking hunt. So over to you with this one, please, Jerry.
The BBC's current flagship natural history series, The Hunt, will surely win top awards for its beautiful, dramatic, and tense filming of this planet's great predators. The calm, matter-of-fact narration provided by Sir David Attenborough, a national treasure who combines the scientific authority of Charles Darwin with the moral stature of St. Francis of Assisi, could not be bettered. The camera work involved to supply such intimate shots of brown bears snatching salmon, leopards shredding impalas, or wild African dogs downing the clueless wildebeest, will he never learn, deserves the highest recognition. Nevertheless, there was one skilled modern hunter missing. Where was the Winchester man or woman chasing a parking space in town? Take the railway station car park after 9 a.m. on many weekdays. If a commuter, who like me, is old-fashioned and prefers a seat, then you opt for a late train and finish. But I've been forced to circle around up to 5 car parks to find a place, eyeball to eyeball with many other commuters. Faces grey with stress, windows steaming up from the perspiration as the clock ticks by and that London meeting or presentation looms closer. I've been reduced to picking off any person coming off the train and stalking them to see if they're leaving. Too slow and you risk an equally desperate rival reversing back and taking pole position. Go too fast and you risk running over the very person that could be on the threshold of saving your life. Who wants to learn the optimum speed to curb crawl? Not me. So bad is the situation, I find myself arguing for another 2-tier station car park like the dismal one on Andover Road. This is, despite its cheap and nasty construction, low roof, comedy ramp in its narrowness, and a drainage system that all suggest it was modelled on the style of a vandalised shopping trolley. And this is the situation now, before all the major new housing projects are forced on us, most obviously Barton Farm. How many new houses, with how many projected commuters exactly? So, that's another small town then, shoehorned onto this one. When estate agents puff up their advertisements with boasts about linking London with Winchester, they are merrily helping to grind this city to a halt. There is the bus, of course, but public transport can be unreliable and slow. In the daytime, the service is fairly regular. By the evening, forget it. Believe me, late on a wintry December evening, clutching a stuffed briefcase whilst holding down a brolly and standing at a bus stop for 30 minutes can be a very lonely place. If you try and do the right thing on a Saturday and take the bus, so bad is the congestion that, as myself and fellow Christmas shoppers found recently, we stood for 55 minutes whilst a chilly Siberian wind whipped through our gulags. We all want to support the high street and independent traders, but I could have done all my Xmas shopping online in the time I'd waited and still had the use of my internal organs. Walk, I hear you say. Well, yes, I do now, but not everyone has the stamina, proximity to the centre, nor wants to walk into the office looking like a Tibetan Sherpa. Also, so bad is the pollution in rush hour along the main arteries into Winchester, we should all be seriously concerned. Last week there was so much lead in the air by 9 a.m, I had the opposite of a legal high. I go into work for that, and I don't want to arrive there wheezing, hair a different tinge and texture to when I set out, while smelling of eau de petrol station forecourt. In defiance, I am off now to Christmas shopping in Winchester by car. So, see you in the new year. But never mind me. Where's Father Christmas going to park? And that was by Joanna Lewis.
And now moving on to Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. We have three items from them this week. Starting with you, please, Claire.
Councillor's Royal Blood. Nothing says rock and roll like Winchester City Council. This was confirmed at a meeting on Monday as Councillor Robert Sanders raised questions of next year's Royal Blood project, celebrating Hampshire's historic links with the Crown. Councillor Sanders asked if the title meant Winchester would be hosting the rock duo of the same name. Royal Blood's debut self-titled album shot to number one last year, and the band has since been credited with breathing life into the genre. But blank faces abound in the council chamber, half populated by retirees. "We'll spill some," joked council boss Stephen Godfrey. While Belgarum alerted council counter-extremism officers, the meeting was told that Royal Blood will explore connections with power, using exhibitions and performances to bring the past to life. With light to be shed on the monarchy and Councillor Sanders' enthusiasm for rock, perhaps a Sex Pistols song is needed. God save the Queen.
And historical items start with 200 years ago. And I'm sorry about that, but we have two more items of Belgarum. And moving on to you, Robin, please.
Hillary's Sweet Win. Another busy pie competition at the High Tavern in Winchester filled the pub with aromas and laughter. There were 31 pies, up four on last year. Judged by Catherine Bates, brewer at the Flower Pots in Cheriton, and Ian McIntosh from the Red Cat Brewery in Winchester. Despite the majority of the pies being savoury, the winner for the first time ever was a sweet pie. It was baked by Hilary May and was a plum marzipan and amaretto custard. In second place was Cat and Andrew Hughes with Caribbean patties, and third was Jim Fulligar with a peppered Bicudum porter pie. The annual competition has been running for several years at the Free House in Hyde Street. The pies were then sold in slices to customers at the pub. A total of £417 was raised and will be donated to the charity, the Trinity Centre, which provides help for the socially marginalised. The pub has several regular attractions, including writers' workshops, a traditional folk music jam, storytelling, and even Spanish lessons.
Missed off the map again. Vexed cries could be heard from the headquarters of the South Downs National Park last week as its rolling hills were wiped from the map by Google. Again. Potential tourists, cyclists, and wealthy retirees were all let down by the search giant as it failed to designate the area as a national park. It is the fourth time the Downs, which stretches from Winchester to Eastbourne in Sussex, has appeared in underwhelming white on Google Maps, while the neighbouring New Forest was splashed in attractive come-hither green. Trevor Beattie, chief executive of South Downs National Park Authority, took the company's IT monkeys to task to get the issue fixed. Mr. Beattie said, "Everyone trusts Google, so, as Britain's newest national park, we've used Google Maps to help people find and enjoy the South Downs, volunteer, and discover local food online. This stops working every time the South Downs National Park gets removed. We don't know why they keep deleting us. We're sure it's not deliberate, but it is very frustrating. It goes to show that for all the internet's innovations, you can't beat an old-fashioned atlas. So long as it was published after the South Downs designation as a national park in 2011.
And now we really do have historical items. And there are two items from 200 years ago, December the 11th, 1815. Farm rents cut. Winchester. Last week, G.P. Gervois Esquire of Heriard House in this county, on the account of the depressed state of agriculture, assembled his tenants and lowered their rents 20%, and then gave them the option of quitting their farms if they chose. But the proposal was not accepted, as they were perfectly satisfied with the liberal allowance made by their generous landlord. And the second item, sudden death. On Tuesday last, a man named Durbridge, who was passing through Alresford in a horse and cart on his way to Winton, with a poor woman who had been removed by general order from London to her parish at St. Peter's Cheese Hill in Winchester, stopped at the Fox Public House to give her some refreshment. And to his great astonishment, she was found quite dead. A coroner's inquest was held on Thursday. Verdict, died by the visitation of God.
Yes. 100 years ago, December the 11th, 1915, traitors warned. London. Dr. Wilson, in his address to Congress on Tuesday, uttered a grave warning to the Germanic plotters in the United States and called for legislation to crush out such creatures of passion, disloyalty, and anarchy. In the South African Assembly, General Smuts announced that the recruiting for the coming expedition against German East Africa had been very successful. He foreshadowed the early conquest of this, Germany's last important colony. On the Dwina front, the German guns have been bombarding our allies' trenches in the neighbourhood of Illuxt, while a move to Linzigen on the Stier was stopped by the Russian artillery. The second paragraph is about a soldier murdered. A sensational occurrence has been brought under the notice of the county police. Some officers of a French-Canadian battalion have been in occupation of what had been an empty house at Greyshot. One of these was Lieutenant Georges Cordier, aged 22, who also acted as adjutant. Somewhere about 4 o'clock on the afternoon of Wednesday, Sergeant Henry Marquis Ozan arrived at the house and was seen to enter, Lieutenant Cordier being also in the house. It was not long afterwards that Sergeant Ozan's body was found in the cellar, the throat, it is said, having been cut, and there being several cuts about the head. The matter was reported, and the commanding officer communicated with the civilian police, who took over Lieutenant Cordier into their charge, and also obtained possession of a carving knife and blood-stained towel.
There are two items from 50 years ago, December the 11th, 1965. Raccoon shot. A 20-pound North American raccoon shot at Rotherfield Park, Farringdon, early on Monday morning, has revived the theories and speculation about the now famous Hampshire puma. Mr. R. Blake, head gamekeeper at the estate, said that he saw the animal on Sunday night for the first time, and the next day found it tearing at a trap in which a grey squirrel was caught. Previously, it had been chasing pheasants and was agile enough to climb 6 feet up nearby trees in Winchester Wood and frighten the other squirrels and birds. The animal, believed to be a raccoon, has dark greyish-brown fur, smoother than a badger, with a 22-inch tail. Simondian Dinner. At their annual dinner on Saturday, former pupils of Peter Simmons Grammar School, Winchester, made it clear they would not allow their school to be brought into the comprehensive system without much further education. Mr. P.H. May, Joint Associate Secretary, told members that the Old Simondians had expressed an interest in the National Education Association, which had been started by the Old Hamptonians to put the view of the grammar schools to the public. This was necessary, he said, as even the good newspapers failed to print opinions favouring the retention of grammar schools.
25 years ago, December the 7th, 1990, and this just persuades us that nothing ever really changes. Park and ride, improved public transport, and stronger enforcement of traffic regulations were put forward as solutions to Winchester's traffic congestion at a packed meeting last week. But it was emphasised that the success of any of these measures was dependent on a radical change in attitude by the many people who currently bring their cars into the city centre. The comments were made during a debate entitled Winchester, a City Strangled by Traffic, which followed the annual meeting of the newly named Winchester City Residents Association. And the second item. A Fair Oak head teacher has urged children not to walk to and from school alone after one of her 12-year-old girl pupils had been attacked in Bishopstoke. The girl, who has not been named, was grabbed by a man in Rhinefield Close as she headed for Wyvern School at about 8:15 a.m. on Tuesday of last week. After the attacker had twice demanded money, the girl managed to struggle free and ran off to school to report the assault. Wyvern head teacher, Miss Sheila Campbell, warned parents and children alike to be on their guard at all times.
And those were our weekly regular features. Thank you all. We'll take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Winchester is like a box of chocolates this Christmas. You never know what you're going to get. A new arts programme is hosting a surprise event daily until Christmas. Every day at 5 p.m, the Woolly Hat Fair holds a performance or exhibition behind a new door. So far, families have been treated to a play in a cafe, an acoustic gig in a tunnel, costumed capers in an upmarket restaurant, and more. And on Wednesday, punters will enter the air raid shelter beneath Winchester Discovery Centre for a demonstration of World War II soundscapes. Organised by the Summer Hat Fair, the project encourages locals to explore the city. After drama at Westgate Museum on December the 1st, woodland creatures invaded the Chesil Rectory to spread festive cheer to diners. And those who braved the cold in the Chesil Tunnel on Saturday were treated to a performance by Winchester songwriter Josh Savage. Michelle Walker, the Hat Fair's artistic director, said, "I guess the point of doing 24 different events is each appeal to a slightly different group of audiences." She added, "We'd love it to become part of Winchester's annual Christmas schedule. All events are free and open at 5 p.m. Clues and photos can be viewed at hatfair.co.uk/advent. The war in Syria will be the focus of a Winchester religious discussion group in the new year. Space in the City at the United Church in Jewry Street has a series of talks on the war from 12:30 p.m. On January the 20th, the speaker will be Professor Simon Keyes of the Winchester Centre of Religions for Reconciliation and Peace. Reverend Stephen Griffith, who has worked in Jerusalem, speaks on the church in Syria on January the 27th. Ray Hazan speaks on February the 3rd. He has worked for Christian Aid for many years. And Fluid Motion Youth Theatre will proudly present their Christmas showcase, a magical and mysterious afternoon of two plays devised entirely by the participants of their Basingstoke and Fareham Youth Theatres. The first of the two plays is Tales of Little Arthur, performed by Basingstoke Youth Theatre.
it will see audiences joining Arthur and Merlin on an action-packed quest as they encounter magic forces, mystical characters, and adventure. The second will see Fareham Youth Theatre perform The Black Island, which sees a young reporter who is framed for a crime she did not commit set out on an adventure to clear her name. The showcase will be performed at the Chesil Theatre in Winchester on December the 19th at 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. Tickets cost £10 and £5. To find out more, visit chiseltheatre.org.uk. And finally, there is a carol concert, the Samaritans Carol Concert, on Wednesday, December the 16th in St Peter's Church, Drury Street, Winchester, from 7:30. £12, and under 16s, tickets are £6, and that includes mulled wine and mince pie reception. Tickets can be bought on the door, or you could ring 01962 713057. That's 01962 713057. Or you can email Don Fielder at btinternet.com. Right, before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 12th of December, the sun will set at 3:58 p.m. And on Wednesday the 16th of December, the sun will rise at 8:03 a.m. and will set at 3:59 p.m. Very, very short days.
Bin controversy. A city council decision to remove tables and chairs from a Winchester city centre coffee vendor has been branded an absurdity. Savage and Bean, which used to trade in Market Lane, was forced to apply for a licence if it wanted seating for its customers. But Councillor Ian Tate told a meeting, "We have an absurdity in Market Lane, where we have asked a local business to remove some tables and chairs, and in the same location we have bins permanently situated on the highway which we seemingly can do nothing about." Referring to his long-running campaign against bins left on the streets, he added, "It's an accumulation of incidents which makes our city not as positive as it should be. Savage and Bean, now trading on the High Street, will not apply for a licence." Co-owner James Freeman said, "It just seems like a way to make money." Councillor Frank Pearson, portfolio holder for Environment, Health and Wellbeing, said delivery and emergency vehicles struggle to squeeze between the bins and tables. He told the Cabinet he raised the issue with Hampshire County Council 2 months ago, but had yet to receive a response.
Hospice boosted by X Factor cash. It is usually one of the biggest selling records of the year. Now Naomi House has been given 4 yeses by the X Factor judges and will receive some of the profits from this year's Winchester single. Naomi House and Jack's Place, which provides services for life limited and life threatened children and young people at Sutton Scotney, will benefit from the sale of the single. The Winchester charity single will be released for download on Sunday, December the 13th, immediately after the grand final, with the CD in stores the following Tuesday. Simon Cowell's record company, Simcoe Limited, will then donate all of its profits made from the CD and downloads to the children's charities, together with Short Lives and Shooting Star Chase. And throughout its partnership with Together for Short Lives, Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospices will receive benefit from some of the proceeds. The last 2 X Factor finalists will perform their prospective winner's single live during the final at the SSE Wembley Arena this weekend. Now in its 7th year, the 2015 X Factor final will see Reginald N. Bolly, Louisa Jackson and Che Chesterman battle it out with Louisa, the current favourite, to take the top spot. Mr. Cowell said, "I have worked with these inspirational charities for many years, and I'm delighted that the X Factor winner's single sales will help families who are going through such unimaginably difficult times." In 2015, raising funds for hospice care is more important than ever. The money we raise will make a real difference. Paul Morgan, head of fundraising for Naomi House and Jack's Place, added, "Christmas is a very special time at our hospices, and the support of Simon Cowell and X Factor means we can make Christmas even more magical for the 263 children and 110 adults that rely on our vital service." And the article is illustrated by X Factor judges Cheryl Fernandez-Vicini and Rita Ora.
Charity planning housing revamp. Winchester's oldest charity is planning to build new social housing for the elderly and revamp its current stock. St John's Winchester Charity needs money to upgrade its almshouses for the modern world, a meeting heard. It comes as a report recommends the charity considers selling some of its properties, including its listed flagship in the Broadway, St John's House. The charity runs two care homes and 84 flats for the elderly in central Winchester. Director Clive Cook told councillors last week how a strategy was being devised to revitalise the charity, thought to have been founded in the 10th century. Mr Cook said, "We know that our accommodation, some of which was built as long ago as 1608, doesn't meet the needs of the elderly in the modern world, and yet people want to live there, and it is a highly functioning community. We probably need to build new accommodation. We do have two sites in the centre of Winchester which can be utilised for that. We probably need to adapt some of our existing accommodation to the extent it can be adapted and comply with an extra care type standard." Trustees approached by the Chronicle opposed the idea of selling St John's House, raised in an independent report, but said its hall could be used more efficiently. Others suggested less prominent assets, such as the De Lunn buildings in Jury Street, could be sold. The St John's House roots date as far back as the 10th century, when it is thought to have been used as a hospital. Mr Cook told the Chronicle, "We have no specific plans at the moment with regards to St John's House. It's obviously part of the essential fabric of the charity. What the report did was, as with all the other sites, just reviewed its performance. Whatever happens to that building, it would be good if it could be harnessed in some way for the good of the community." In his address to councillors, Mr Cook said the charity needed a plan to cope with the extremely expensive operation of care homes. He said, "The problem with all of that is it will have a very high price tag, and whilst we have a reasonably healthy balance sheet, we're challenged on the income front, and we certainly can't afford to do all of those things on our own. We are looking for partners, and inevitably, we're looking for sources of funding." Council leader Stephen Godfrey said, "We're very happy to support you in any way we can, and we wish you well in your work." No specific grants or schemes were discussed.
Market footfall is expected to smash record. Hundreds of thousands of people can't be wrong. Winchester really is the place to be this Christmas. From the popular market and traditional panto to surprise performances behind secret doors, it has more than ever to explore this festive season. Winchester is regularly named among the best Christmas markets in the country. It was one of the first towns in Britain to adopt a German-style market and has become more popular every year for its cathedral backdrop. The Cathedral Close was lit up a week after its opening for the annual Lantern Parade, with more than 200 children clinging to their craft creations in windy conditions. The procession ended in style with carols on the green and a spectacular fireworks display. More than 400,000 people flocked to the market in 2014, and with football up during the rest of the year, it won't take a Christmas miracle to smash the record again. After stocking up on gifts, you can enjoy a well-earned rest by climbing the Cathedral Tower for spectacular views of the close and city lights. The experience comes with a 90-minute tour of the cathedral, plus mulled wine and mince pies in the medieval undercroft. It's not just about the big day either. Advent is more important than ever in Winchester's festive schedule. There's the Woolly Hat Fair, where a secret performance is held behind a new door every day. Shops, churches, theatres, museums, and even an air raid shelter are opening up to turn the city into a live Advent calendar. And with experiences from dance to poetry, music to education, and sound installations in an air raid shelter, the festival throws up surprises for everyone.
Stark Drink Drive message. It's the hard-hitting campaign aimed at saving lives this Christmas. Hampshire Police has launched its annual crackdown on drink drivers, using a young woman who sees herself lying dead in a mortuary to ensure their message gets through. The month-long campaign reinforces the stark message that people who drive after drinking risk ruining not just their own lives, but those of others too. This year's crackdown will include the wreckage of a crashed car on display across the county, including at Sainsbury's in Hedge End on December the 14th between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Last year, almost 7,000 drivers were breathalysed across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and 150 tested positive. Road Safety Sergeant Rob Hurd said, "They could have caused a crash that killed or left someone injured with a lasting, life-changing impact for themselves, family and friends. Anyone who suspects someone of drinking and driving is asked to call 101 with details." And the article is illustrated by three pictures, one of which is of a woman lying dead, and the second is of a general view of a police cell, and the third is of Rob Hurd standing by his van.
Beards and Bellies turn out for fun run. Winchester was flooded with Beards and Bellies as the annual Santa Fun Run took to the streets. Now in its sixth year, the event supports local charity Naomi House and Jack's Place. The charity, which provides care to more than 280 life-limited and life-threatened children, young people and their families, has already raised £15,000 from the run, but is confident of surpassing £25,000. It is the second year the event has started from the Guildhall and more than 700 people took part. "It's just a great feeling for us to have that level of support," said marketing manager Keith Wilson. "It's extra special for us as we get to run in the city centre, which is the charity's hometown. This is the most exciting run I've done this year." The 5 kilometre route took the runners through the High Street and then past the cathedral and the statue of Alfred the Great. Participants received their own Santa suits for the race and were awarded with medals on completion.
Flood scheme approved. Civic chiefs have approved a flood defence scheme, which they say will protect Winchester city centre for 100 years. Walls, earth buns and emergency barriers are being rolled out in areas submerged during downpours last year. 74 homes near the River Itchen are still at risk, and it is hoped the project will also safeguard River Park Leisure Centre, St Bede Primary School and Winchester School of Art. Winchester City Council says the project could prevent damages of nearly £13 million over the next century, and has even factored in climate change. The city had to call in the military in February 2014 as homes and businesses were threatened. Hundreds of sandbags were laid and the city was saved when 30 tons of gravel were piled into the river to divert its flow at Easton. City councillors approved their £250,000 share of the budget at Cabinet last week. The government, county council and Southampton University are also contributing. A consultation is being held at the School of Art in January, where residents can view plans and speak to officers.
Reindeer dies in dog attack. A devastating dog attack has left a Meon Valley family searching for answers after one reindeer was killed and another injured. Poachers crashed their jeep 4x4 through the fields of 12 Oaks Farm in Swanmore at 11:30 p.m. on Friday whilst attempting to escape the police. A helicopter patrol and dog unit were close in pursuit. The incident on Brickyard Road saw the men in the vehicle flee the scene, leaving behind five lurcher-type dogs. The property is home to Emma's mobile farm, which takes animals to schools to educate children. Owner Emma Thompson was shocked to find her two-year-old reindeer Comet ravaged after escaping its pen. Their rabbit Pie was also killed. When I saw Comet, I felt very angry. At first I was just a bit taken aback and my husband wouldn't let me see him. People have said that the people in question are known to them and poaching has been a problem in the area for many years.
Another dog-related piece here. RSPCA reports rise in illegal puppy farming. Hampshire is one of the worst areas in the south for illegal puppy farming, a new report has revealed. The RSPCA said it has received 87 complaint calls so far this year about the black market trade operating in the county. The animal welfare charity has, in total, had 3,232 calls nationwide, a 122% increase from 5 years ago. RSPCA Assistant Director of Public Affairs, David Bowles, said, "These statistics just go to show the number of reports we receive are on the up, just as the number of puppy farms and dealers increase. We believe the dealers buy them in from Ireland and the continent for around £100 and then sell them on the internet for many hundreds, even thousands of pounds. These people are gambling with the lives of not just these puppies, but the dogs they are bred from too, and they are playing with the emotions of people and families who take them on as pets. It is clear the present legislation is not working and that this sickening trade needs to be stopped." Greater London racked up the highest number of calls, 362, followed by Greater Manchester with 209. The RSPCA is now urging people to tell the government that puppies are more precious than pieces of metal.
Iron Age hoard leaves country. Four Iron Age coins have been discovered near the famous settlement of Danebury. Unfortunately, three of the coins have left the country, an inquest heard. The silver coins, more than 2,000 years old, were found by metal detectors by the hill fort near Stockbridge on September the 20th. They showed stylized horses, boars and a man. One was found by an Englishman, Ian Carruthers, but the others were found by Belgians and Dutch, Wilco Rieskelt, Dennis Hildveld and Ronald Kraling. The inquest in Winchester heard that none have been handed in to the British Museum or the fines officer, Katie Hines. She said that as there were four coins, they would be officially regarded as a hoard and could not be removed from the UK. Any discovery of more than two coins is so classed. "We didn't tell them we thought this might be a hoard. At the time, we did not realise the circumstance of the discovery. They say they had an export license. A single coin cannot be classed as treasure. The Hampshire Cultural Trust, which runs museums across Hampshire, is interested in acquiring the coins, said Ms. Hines.
Medieval artefact. A medieval silver bar mount has been found in a field near Winchester, a hearing herd. A 14th century silver item would have adorned a belt or strap. It was discovered by Paul Eggington from Surrey on farmland at Crawley on February the 5th, an inquest heard. Katie Hines, Hampshire Finds liaison officer for the Portable Antiquities Scheme, told the hearing that such items were usually copper alloys and silver ones were unusual but not unique. Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short declared the mount to be treasure, as it is more than 300 years old and made of either gold or silver. The exact location of the find has not been revealed. Miss Hines said she believed Winchester Museum in the square was interested in acquiring the piece.
Road will not be shut permanently. Campaigners have claimed a partial victory in their battle to keep Andover Road open after the Barton Farm scheme. The old Roman road will be turned into a pedestrian and cycle path when the main route into town is diverted through the 2000 home estate. But Hampshire County Council has climbed down from plans to decommission the road. Councillor Paul Twelvetree, who started a petition of more than 350 signatures against the closure, said this leaves the possibility of reopening it in future if traffic problems arise. He has previously warned the closure will turn his ward of Littleton and Harestock into a rat run and send heavy traffic past the estate's school and health facilities. Councillor Twelvetree said, although we haven't been able to persuade them at this point to scrap the mad idea of diverting the Andover Road through the new estate, they have agreed, at our urging, to use a traffic regulation order rather than a stopping up order, he said. This means that they will keep the old Andover Road as a highway rather than decommissioning it completely, leaving the possibility of reopening it at some point in the future when traffic problems occur, as we expect they will. A public consultation will be held on the traffic regulation order, it has been confirmed. It is hoped early designs for the pedestrianised route will go to the Barton Farm Forum on February the 24th. Meanwhile, traffic lights have been installed at the temporary construction entrance in Andover Road North. Work is continuing there, despite a land price dispute which is holding up the scheme. An anti-skid surface and pedestrian crossing have also been installed, but the crossing is not yet in use.
Thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. And just another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And thanks to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And also from me, Maria. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet.